Hello, this is Kathy, and this is the Lynn Daily for Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. Castle Road in Nahant is where the sidewalk ends. By Olivia McKenna Stevens. Nahant. The planning board met to discuss the ongoing issues with the Castle Road sidewalk after discovering a change to a property survey that members said they had not been informed about. The board was not notified of an upgrade regarding a 17-foot easement and an approval not required endorsement that was signed without the board's knowledge. An A&R endorsement occurs when a proposed plan meets the zoning footage and access requirements and therefore does not require a full subdivision review. The board typically oversees the process, making the lack of communication an issue members said they must address with the select board. In the area of Castle Road that was once home to the Coast Guard housing, the sidewalk has remained unrestored since 2022. Residents in the area have also pushed back against the narrowing of Castle Road, raising concerns about safety for both drivers and pedestrians. The board's primary concern regarding the Castle Road sidewalk has been public infrastructure and safety, particularly because the area has lacked a restored sidewalk for several years. The board will meet with the select board in a joint meeting on Thursday to discuss the issue of how communication breakdown occurred. Board members hope to receive an explanation for the communication issues and establish a process to ensure they are notified of similar matters in the future. The joint meeting will be held at 6:30 p.m. in the lower-level conference room at Nahant Town Hall and will also be available via Zoom. Additional information about the sidewalk plans is expected at the joint meeting and the next planning board meeting. Lynn seeks alternatives to wetland crossings by Deisha Smith and Sophia Harris. Lynn. The Lynn Conservation Commission continued a public hearing on a proposed development after raising concerns about plans to construct a roadway through a wetland resource area and asking the applicant to investigate whether the site could be assessed another way. Much of the discussion centered on whether the development could instead be assessed from East Park Avenue, potentially eliminating the need to cross or alter the wetlands. Commission members said the Massachusetts Wetland Protection Act and local regulations require alternatives to be considered before work affecting wetlands is approved. They questioned what resources would be affected by the proposed crossing, including bordering vegetated wetlands and a stream or bank, as well as whether the design would meet state stream crossing requirements. The applicant raised potential complications with an East Park Avenue entrance, including roadway grade requirements in an existing 30-foot right-of-way. The applicant said zoning regulations generally require a minimum width of 40 feet. Commission members asked the applicant to investigate those issues further and seek input from the city departments, including the Department of Public Works or Inspectional Services, about whether another entrance would be permitted. The commission also discussed whether alternatives such as a smaller private way or shared driveway could provide access to the proposed homes without disturbing the wetlands. Members emphasized that the commission has historically been reluctant to approve direct alterations to bordering vegetated wetlands when another option is possible. Questions were also raised about the project's detention pond and whether the drainage design meets storm water management standards. The commission discussed correspondence from the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection indicating that filling associated with the project could require Section 401 water quality certification or deed restriction. Members and the applicant questioned what type of deed restriction DEP was referring to. The commission also discussed whether restrictions could eventually be incorporated into an order of conditions to prevent future development from increasing runoff beyond what was what the proposed detention system could accommodate. Before making a decision on the project, the commission is also considering hiring an independent consultant to conduct a peer review of the proposal. The review could examine the project's wetland impacts as well as its drainage and stormwater design. The applicant may provide the commission with several potential consultants, although members said whoever is selected should be independent and have no conflict or immediate connection to the developer. A neighborhood meeting has not yet been scheduled. Commission members said holding one before the applicant investigates alternative designs could be premature because the plans may change substantially. Residents can continue to weigh in through the commission's public hearing process. The commission ultimately continued the hearing until its next meeting, giving the applicant additional time to investigate alternatives and potentially redesign the project to avoid wetland disturbance. The commission also briefly revisited a separate long-running wetlands dispute involving the town of Linfield. In November 2023, the Lynn Conservation Commission issued an enforcement order to Linfield under the Massachusetts Wetlands Protection Act regarding alterations to the Nell's Pond Cedar Creek wetlands area. In April, Conservation Commission Chair Mike Toomey, speaking as a resident, expressed concern about drainage alterations that he and others have argued caused environmental damage and increased flood risks in Lynn. At the time, Toomey said the commission had received no response to the enforcement order and maintained that Linfield was not in compliance. The solution in Linfield was to break through the berm, damage the pipe, and leave the problem to the city of Lynn. Toomey said at the time, "I've seen nothing on record that changes my opinion about where the problem was." Toomey said Linfield was seeking legal counsel and had urged the commission to retain an attorney specializing in wetlands law. Attempts were later made to schedule a joint meeting between two municipalities, but the meeting was ultimately canceled. 4 months later, the commission had little substantive update on the enforcement matter, beyond being told that an estimate had been presented to Linfield regarding the filling of a notice of intent. Before the meeting adjourned, Toomey again separated his comments from his role on the commission and asked for permission to communicate directly with people involved in the matter. "I'm removing myself from the commission and speaking as a resident," he said. "I just wanted to request permission to communicate with the wetland and engineering consultant John McAllister, basically just to describe to him and possibly to the Lynn Water and Sewer Commission, since they have taken on the mission, the importance of restoring the berm and the pipe to its original inverts and elevations that I proposed in the original plan." Swampscott Center for the Performing Arts to open before Labor Day, by Sophia Harris and Erin Hickey. Swampscott. Swampscott's Center for the Performing Arts is set to open by Labor Day weekend at the historic Hawthorne by the Sea, bringing dining and entertainment and community programming to the town-owned waterfront property. Local restaurateur Johnny Ray is preparing to bring people back through the doors. The center will feature a casual restaurant and bar with an emphasis on handcrafted cocktails, while also serving as a venue for live entertainment, community programming, and special events throughout the year. In keeping with the theme of the Performing Arts Center, Ray said, "We'll be working with several entertainment agents that offer a variety of genres, from jazz to classical music." Renzo's Pizza, formerly located at Essex Street, will return as part of the center's food offerings. the Hawthorne will also be home to Maria's Gourmet, a Marblehead-based business founded by Maria Torres. Torres has expanded the business with two locations this year, including one at the former Driftwood restaurant and another at the Hawthorne. Ray said he plans to use the property for live performances, community celebrations, educational programming, and events hosted by local organizations. ASURE diversity event is planned for October, with additional programming expected to be announced in the coming months. On October 1st, the center will host Swampstock, a play on Woodstock, featuring a series of bands and a community drum circle to benefit the Marblehead Counseling Center. We want this to be a place where people come for dinner and drink, but also where they make memories, said Ray. Whether it's live music, community event, or family celebration, our goal is for the Hawthorne to once again to be a place that brings people together. He said he has plans in the works with the North Shore Children's Theater and also plans to host community comedy nights. Ray said he plans to devote much of his attention to the launch and operation of the Swampscott Center for the Performing Arts. Being directly involved in a performing arts center represents a lifetime of work in the entertainment industry, he said. Ray added that he and co-owner Richard Messenger, who is also a partner in Johnny Ray's Music Emporium, hope to bring a very special experience to the entire community. As part of that effort, he will take a more behind-the-scenes role in the day-to-day operations of his Marblehead restaurant, The Beacon, while remaining involved in both businesses. The new venture received several key approvals from the Select Board in July following lengthy public discussions over how the Hawthorne property would operate during the temporary lease. The board approved common entertainment and liquor license for the Performing Arts Center. Some board members and residents raised concerns about noise from live entertainment and its potential effect on the surrounding neighbors. Ray told the board that our doors will always be open to comments and suggestions from the community, and said live music acts will be required to work with professional sound engineers to minimize disruption to the neighbors. The project is intended to preserve elements of Hawthorne by the Sea's history, while putting the building back into use as the town continues weighing the waterfront's property future. The Select Board has recently been developing a request for proposals for the property's long-term use after the Performing Arts Center lease expires. Discussions have focused on the town's priorities for the site, including open space, commercial uses, waterfront access, and the future of the existing building. The board, on August 4th, voted against any proposal that would include a residential development at this site. The vote was split, with members Mary Ellen Fletcher and Danielle Leonard and Wayne Spritz voting against residential use, arguing that the town meeting authorized the property's purchase with the intent that the land be available to residents. Members Ted Dooley and Katie Phelan voted against the measure, saying that while they agreed the property should be available for public use, they did not want to establish an especially narrow scope of proposals. For now, the temporary lease gives the property a new use after several years without a tenant, with organizers expecting to announce additional concerts, performances, and community events as programming is finalized. A summer experiment takes root in Peabody by Amanda Lurie. Peabody. Mark D'Elia has spent this summer growing strawberries, peppers, eggplant, tomatoes, and broccoli outside his Peabody home without planting any of them in soil. Instead, 6 5-gallon buckets buried in his front garden hold an experimental hydroponic setup that combines D'Elia's passion for sustainability and his willingness to experiment. If you can do enough of this stuff close to where people live, as proposed to way out in the farmland or down in Chile, where they ship it up in buckets and barrels, then you save energy that way, D'Elia said. Hydroponic methods allow plants to grow without soil by immersing their roots in water-based solutions containing the nutrients they need. D'Elia's setup is based on the Kratky method, a passive form of hydroponics that requires no pumps or electricity. As the plants consume the nutrient solution, its level gradually falls, creating an air pocket inside the bucket that provides oxygen to the roots. Dalia first experimented with the method 2 summers ago, and he originally kept the buckets above ground, but by midsummer the solution had become too warm and the plants began drooping. This year he decided to try again with the buckets underground. Getting them there meant digging by hand through a layer of rock and sand beneath his yard. Now the surrounding ground helps insulate the buckets and keep their contents cooler. Dalia also painted their black lids white so they could absorb less heat from the sun. So far, the changes seem to be working. Nearly every bucket has produced something to eat, including peppers that reached what Dalia called supermarket size. Additionally, 2 large eggplants were nearing harvest, and the strawberry and tomato plants had already yielded fruit. The broccoli, though, attracted some unwanted attention. Dalia and his wife, Donna Qualters, ate a head before rabbits found the plants and devoured what remained. The plants got their start just down the street at Newall Fields Community Farm, where Qualters volunteers. She brought home seedlings for Dalia to use in his experiment. "I was willing to plant whatever she could bring down," Dalia said. Dalia was also quick to emphasize that Qualters is the one with the green thumb. "I'm not sure I do have a green thumb. I think my wife's green thumb is better than mine. I'm sort of interested in techno fixes," Dalia said. While Dalia based his experiment on the Kratky method, he added his own twist by giving the plants an extra supply of oxygen. A small electric air pump continuously sends bubbles into the buckets, providing additional oxygen to the roots. The addition borrows from deep water culture, another form of hydroponics, where plant roots remain in nutrient-rich water that is continuously aerated. The plants are doing considerably better than Dalia's first attempt 2 summers ago. Although he cannot say whether the improvement comes from the added oxygen, burying the buckets to keep them cooler, or some combination of the two. This is sort of semi-scientific, he joked. As his summer experiment winds down, Dalia is already thinking about giving it another go next year. That willingness to keep tinkering fits the man tending the garden in a green hat adorned with a wind turbine in the words, "Renewable energy, I'm a big fan." For Dalia, though, the experiment is ultimately about something broader than what grows in each bucket. There's a tie-in with not so much green energy, but with the overall sustainability. And in your face approach to gastroparesis awareness by Olivia Haydar. Staff, Lynn, despite affecting up to 5 million Americans, gastroparesis remains relatively unknown, which is why resident Andrew Bellevue started his own tribute 10 years ago. Bellevue was diagnosed with the condition at 11 years old and said symptoms can vary person to person. He suffered from constant nausea and vomiting, and sometimes vomiting up to 15 times a day. Gastroparesis, which Bellevue described as paralysis of the stomach, can prevent an individual from properly eating, digesting, or absorbing nutrients. The quality of life is not really there, and it's just mind-boggling that this condition, as debilitating as it is widely unheard of, Bellevue said. "I can never wrap my head around it, so that's kind of why I started Pie Face Challenge." On break from his freshman year at Elms College in 2016, Bellevue said he was scrolling through Twitter when he saw a U.S. senator post that August should be designated Gastroparesis Awareness Month, stopping him dead in his tracks. At the time, Bellevue said the Ice Bucket Challenge was gaining popularity, and he saw firsthand through the Lynn community how much awareness it raised for ALS. He wanted to do something similar for gastroparesis. "I had gotten the game by Hasbro, the pie face game, where you flick the lever and the whipped cream gets in your face for Christmas. And I was obsessed with it, Bellevue said. I thought maybe I could do something with the pie face, and it's kind of symbolic of gastroparesis because part of the rule is that you can't lick off the whipped cream to mimic those of us who can't eat. Bellevue said a majority of people with the condition receive nutrition through total peritoneal nutrition, TPN, or feeding tubes, while finding relief can involve a trial and error process. He said there were times when he took four or five medications that worked briefly before becoming ineffective, forcing him to readjust, try something new, and return to square one with his debilitating symptoms. You not only don't have the energy, you're malnourished, Bellevue said. The littlest tasks that people take for granted, like doing your daily errands, for some people with gastroparesis, that's like climbing Mount Everest. Today, Bellevue is one of the lucky individuals who has had success with Antera therapy, a gastric electrical stimulator, which he said is a pacemaker for the stomach. A few months later, in January 2017, the challenge began to get picked up by athletes from the Red Sox, Patriots, and Bruins. The first to get the ball rolling was former Red Sox pitcher David Price, a moment Bellevue described as the greatest of his life. More recently, he nominated New England Patriots quarterback Drake May and his wife, Anne Michelle May, on X. I'm a diehard sports fan, so that was kind of my coping mechanism throughout my worst with gastroparesis. To see them acknowledge it and take time out of their day to literally smash a pie in their face is crazy to me, Bellevue said. I can't quantify it in words, but it truly means a lot personally, and it means even more to the gastroparesis community. The movement continued to grow, with Governor Maura Healey proclaiming August Gastroparesis Month in Massachusetts in 2023, which Bellevue said took him by surprise because the condition remains relatively unknown. Bellevue said he noticed even more support throughout Boston after Healey's proclamation, with the Prudential Tower and Sachem Bridge being lit up green for awareness. The recognition made him feel seen and heard, he said. So far, Bellevue's challenge has raised $20,000 for GPAC, a nonprofit organization supporting people with gastroparesis, and has reached Italy, Africa, Wales, the UK, Canada, Australia, and Chile, along with the participants in 40 U.S. states, he said. We literally fight and scrap for every single piece of awareness, Bellevue said, so any attention that we get to gastroparesis is truly impactful and very meaningful to the community. Those interested in participating in the Gastroparesis Pie in the Face Challenge can find more information on Bellevue's website and social media accounts, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and X. Saugus Water Bill Concerns Keep Flowing by Elizabeth Della Piani Staff. Frustration with water bills has continued in town as resident Patrick Darigo approached the Board of Selectmen Tuesday night after his abatement was denied despite the spike in his bill. This is just a month after residents Deborah and Michael Fauci approached the board about bills totaling $15,000, which has created a financial burden. First of all, I want to say I had to wait 7 months for the bill to come out from February to August 2025. Number two, I filed an abatement because my water bill was four times the amount I've paid in the last 7 to 10 years, Darigo said. Darigo said over the years his bill has been $200 with a sudden rise to $1,000. I contested it and filled out an application, and I sent it in to the treasurer collector. My problem is I was denied. First of all, I sent the paper in. They said it was okay. They stamped it, he said, before noting the date on the stamp was April 24th. Darigo said a person came out to check his meter and claimed he was only there for 5 minutes. He didn't even turn on a water faucet or try anything out. He said everything looked good, Darigo said. Selectman Chief Cicilline told Errigo that he scanned the documents and that the abatement was denied because after testing the meter, it came back not faulty, according to the Treasurer Collector's office. You don't have a sprinkler system. You don't have a pool. They came out and inspected your home, Cicilline said. Darago said that when they came out to inspect the home, he had already had the new meter installed, that the issue was the old meter. It says they tested your old meter, not the new meter. They tested the old one that they took out, Cicilline explained. Darago didn't think the meter in the picture was his, claiming he couldn't see any serial numbers. That's any meter that could have been picked up. That doesn't tell me anything, he said. Why should I have to wait 4 months for them to tell me I was denied, and then they want interest on the fee? Vice Chair Anthony Colangelo said that the two abatements he had filed were also denied. My bill was $1,900. It went to $3,600. They said there was nothing wrong with the meter. The next time I got a bill, the same meter, only I added a sprinkler system, and my bill went from $3,600 to $600. Anyone who said that meter is not faulty is impossible. It's impossible. He said that when someone comes in for an abatement, there should be at least a face-to-face conversation. This is what you get, Colangelo said, holding up papers Darago had provided. Denied. There is no explanation. Chair Deborah Panetta asked whether Darago had met with the treasurer collector, Wendy Hatch. Darago said he had never gotten the chance, and Panetta asked if she could recommend setting up that meeting. We can't do anything about the water bill. I don't know if there is an appeal process, Panetta said, with Cicilline confirming that there was. You can meet with her and tell her what your concern is and go through the appeal process, she said. Darago said that his frustrations were not aimed at the board, but with a waiting period before being handed a 24-page denial. Woman accused of plotting to kill Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is sentenced to 6 years. Washington, story by Michael Kunzelman, Associated Press. A Massachusetts woman who told police that she bought homemade firebombs to the U.S. Capitol to kill Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent was sentenced on Tuesday to just over 6 years in prison. Riley English, a 26-year-old transgender woman, said she was in the grips of a mental health crisis and abusing drugs when she drove to Washington in January 2025 and told Capitol Police that she was there to kill Bessent on the day of his Senate confirmation. I never wanted to hurt anyone, she told the U.S. District Judge Rudolph Contreras. I'm not a political person. I'm not a violent person. Contreras, who was nominated to the bench by Democrat President Barack Obama, sentenced English to 6 years and 1 month of imprisonment, followed by 3 years of supervised release. English has remained jailed since her arrest and will get credit for nearly 20 months that she already has spent in custody. You've had a very difficult life, Contreras told English. Hopefully the progress you've made in jail to this date has set you on the right path. Nobody was injured, and Contreras said her plan to harm Bessent had an exceedingly low or non-existent chance of success. Bessent wasn't at the Capitol when English arrived on January 27, 2025. The Molotov cocktails that English brought to the Capitol appeared to be incapable of igniting, the judge noted.